Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This is Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Scored a touchdown earlier on a direct snap. Now it's Michelle's turn, running all the way. Gets to the edge. Sonny Michelle will send the Dogs home to the championship game.
...53.5-yard drive near hash, kick right, snap, hold, kick is away, it's reaching, and it is good, 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 Hot Pod does it, all right, Hot Pod!
Wilcox with an up and out, wide open, touchdown, Israel 2!
All right, welcome in. It is another edition of the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, the best podcast network for professionals. Joining me, as always, is Israel Troop. Israel, what's up, man?
What's going on, man? Been running around here left and right trying to get girdles and pants for our start of spring on Tuesday. A lot of excitement going on around here in Albany.
There you go. Hey, we kick off spring next week as well. We're fitting kids for equipment today, actually. So we're in the same boat, Israel. Glad that we're actually having a spring.
I know that's right.
Also joining us, the CEO of Monster Bass. It's Rick Patry. Rick, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Man, we're good here, man. It's a rainy day here in Nashville. The baseball game actually got canceled, but here at my school, as you can see in the background. So Rick, thank you for coming on, man. I'm glad you could join us. And man, it looks I'm kind of jealous looking at the weather there behind you. You're in Southern California. I'll trade you this rain if you want me to, and I'll take some of that sunshine you got.
Yeah, oddly enough, I'm flying into to Tennessee on Friday, so hopefully that rain goes away and we're not dealing with any of that when we get there.
It's supposed to be like almost 80 and sunny tomorrow here in Nashville, at least. I don't know what part you're going into.
Flying into Knoxville.
Oh, well, then you might catch this system that we're going to pass on to Knoxville. But so glad you could join us, man. This is going to be, this is going to be a fun ride here. Your motto is work harder, play hardest. How did you come up with that motto?
Well, I think a lot of people as they get older forget, don't give themselves permission to have fun, right? Like we grow up. We have fun as a kid. Then, priorities change. We get married, have a kid, get a job, and then we just get stuck in a 9-to-5. And so I've always wanted to live my life by having fun, because if it's not enjoyable, why am I even here? And so I'm going to work hard. I'm going to play hard and live my life that way.
Absolutely. Hey. And so Monster Bass, the concept of Monster Bass, what led you there? What led you to bass fishing? How did you find the market and the style of business you wanted to do with the and just tell us a little bit about what Monster Bass is all about.
Yeah, actually the industry kind of found me, I grew up in Syracuse, New York. I was fishing down on that lake with my dad, and you know how it goes. You get a little bit older and your priorities change, You go from fishing to I'm more interested in girls. I go to college, grad school, get married, have a kid. And it's not until your kid, says, I want to go fishing that I got back into it. And I went back to the tackle shop and I to buy stuff. And I was overwhelmed. I didn't know what to get. There were so many items that were out there. And I was like, I have no idea what the heck to do, because the worst thing I can do is take my kid fishing and then not catch anything. Right. So I sat on that for a little bit, and it wasn't until, a couple years later, that I thought to myself, well, why not come up with a monthly subscription box and send the right baits to people based upon the places where they love to fish. Now, this model isn't very new, right? Or isn't like it's unique. Like there's box of the month clubs for everything that out there, but they all send you random stuff. But anyone that knows anything in the world about fishing knows that the same baits that you're throwing in Georgia in the month of April are not the same baits that the guy in Michigan is throwing. The water temperature's different. The pattern, the bait fish are different. And so all the other solutions that were out there just sent you random stuff. And so I thought, let's break the country into regions. Let's curate baits based upon each one of those regions. And let's build a community around each one of those regions so that we have a team of people that can show you exactly how to use the baits that we send you. Because there's nothing more frustrating than just, you know, going out to the water and not catching fish, right? It's it's nice to go out there, but it's a lot more fun when you're catching stuff. So
exactly.
So yeah. I got a question for you, man. That sounds sure. awesome. How do you they can subscribe to this, right? So how do they fill out something that lets you know, like, kind of what they're looking for? You know, like you said, y'all break it up into regions. Yeah. Because obviously April here is totally different from Michigan. Right. So do they kind of fill out kind of like what they want and kind of what they're looking for when they subscribe?
Yeah. So we've tried this a couple different ways. And, you know, during our first year of operation, we used to give you a survey at the start, and we'd ask you, like, where do you fish from, the boat or the bank? What's your skill level? What baits do you like to fish with? And what we found was the survey results that we get from our customers told us that they'd fill out the survey and say, I like to fish with spinner baits. And if we didn't send them spinner baits, they weren't very happy. And so what we did was we kind of tweaked the model. And so now it's more about just tell us where you live. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go to our team of pros that live in the areas where you live and fish. And they're going to tell us what the best baits are for that time of season. Right. So it's not just me picking out baits sitting here in Los Angeles saying, hey, let's send this spinner bait to the guys in Kentucky. No, I've got guys that actually live in Kentucky that are fishing the waters right now. I've got tournament pros, I've got shops and guides, and they give us all their feedback and input in terms of everything from bait selection, color selection, size, what we pair things with. So what we do is we'll send you the first box, and it's, again, it's based upon our recommendations. And then we survey you at the end of the month. Where did we hit the mark? Where did we miss the mark? What would you like to see next? And we start to use more of your feedback once you've gotten your first box to build your profile, as opposed to building the profile from the get-go.
Wow. That's awesome. pretty thorough. I, you know, the team of pros and things like that, like, how did you, when you were curating your list of pros and guides, how did you cast that net, pun intended?
Yeah. So, you know, there's two ways to look at this. You could go out and you could look at all the sponsored anglers, the tournament anglers. But I always felt like they were just going to tell me, well, I'm sponsored by company X, so you should use company X's baits. So then I thought, let's go find some influencers that are out there that are really good sticks. Like, there's a guy named Alex Rudd. This guy, you know, he doesn't have the biggest following. He's got like 50,000 subs on YouTube. You know, sure, I could have gone out and found a guy that's got 250, 300,000 or a million subscribers. But is he or she going to be that stick that really knows how to fish that area? So I went out and found guys like Alex Rudd who know their area. They're not just guys fishing with gummy bears on YouTube. These are guys that are actually out there showing people how to fish each and every day. And then I combined that with some of the local tackle shops and guides, because they just want to put you on product that's going to help you catch fish so you come back into their store. So I wanted to make sure we were getting really good information that was unbiased based upon sponsorships, so that the recommendations that they gave us that we in turn turned into product selection was going to be accurate and informative.
Man, that's awesome. That sounds like some great customer service to me. Yeah. It's great that you guys have places that actually fish in those areas, man. That's huge. Cause I mean, like you said, I fish in Adel, which is Adel, Georgia, South Georgia. That's why I have this Southern draw that you hear now. So for us, you know, we use minnows every once in a while. We use, sure. Red worms, you know, red ridges, uh-huh. things like that, which is common, you yep. know, to hear that you guys have that plus just a couple of other things too, to kind of, you know, boost it up a little bit is awesome. Especially when you got people in place that can tell you exactly how are the fish hitting, what are they like, and things like that.
Yeah. It's, you know, and it's not just the bait selection, right? Like, so we send you a box every month, but we also, we're running, starting in May, we're running the Big Bass Championships. And it's literally, it's free for every one of our subscribers. And it's a year-long tournament for the biggest fish. And it's the biggest fish in your region. Cause I realized, you know, Texas, Florida, California, they're a region unto themselves, right? Cause they're going to catch the biggest fish, no doubt. But so we break the rest of the country into the different regions, and it's a one fish tournament all year long. Any one of your catches could be the biggest fish, and you could earn up to $10,000 worth of, you know, prizes, because cash and prizes. And it's, again, it's just another way to get people out there fishing with the baits that we give them, get them interacting within our community and having a little fun in the process. So it's a cool little thing that we started.
So when you live in California, you live by the coast, I imagine.
Yeah.
When is saltwater fishing gonna enter your business model, or is it already there?
It's not. So it's a really good question. You know, this company, we're not even 2 years old yet, and you know, the bass market is such a it's giant. I could spend the next 3 years doing nothing but bass. Now, we'll probably enter the saltwater market, but I probably won't have that discussion internally until probably August.
Right.
And then we'll make the decision. Do we bring that out in time for the holidays, or do we wait until 2022? So it's definitely on the radar, but it's not something that we're ready to jump into just yet.
Yeah, I was going to say some of my best stories and some of my best success stories are in the saltwater and not the freshwater. So I was kind of curious as far as that goes. And man, it's a lot of fun. I was somebody that grew up, I thought fishing was the most boring thing in the world. Like, you know, you just throw a line out there and you sit there and watch grass grow until you catch something. And obviously I was never successful. I didn't know what I was doing. And then, you know, I married my wife, and her family is just every single one of them fish. And her two brothers, they fish in a lot of local tournaments. And then on my dad's side of the family, I've got a couple of cousins that are fishing charters down in Panama City. And they run the bays in the inshore, and they fish for whatever you catch inshore fishing, not deep sea fishing. So, needless to say, over the last, I guess, 8 years, I've been inundated with fishing. I still don't really know what I'm doing, but it's a lot more fun. I look forward to it, going out on the boat and throwing lines out there, and it's a lot of fun. And you know, I'm glad you guys came around, and now I might look like an expert. So thank you for making me look good.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I'm more of a saltwater guy myself too. Like, I love going out there. You know, I was just down in Louisiana. We were doing some tuna fishing. I had the opportunity to go to Guatemala and fish for some sailfish. To me, there's no comparison. Like, I get it. I love, you know, people are diehard about bass fishing, but I didn't grow up I really didn't grow up around that. And, you know, it's funny that I got into bass, you know, I got into fishing when, you know, if you gave my brother one day left on this planet, he'd probably throw in a dip and go fishing. And here I am, you know, I'm knee deep in the industry. I go to all the events, and my brother sits at home, and he's it kills him, because he would like, this would be his dream job. And, you know, I can give you, you know, if it's my last day, I can give you 50 other things I'd rather do besides go bass fishing. I like fishing, but you know, it's not like I've spent my entire life dreaming about getting into bass fishing. It's been a pretty interesting ride.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's have a little fun now. You know, obviously our show is brought to you by Monster Bass. We have Rick Patry on here, but we're also brought to you by betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. They also have an online casino as well. So head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And this is also a thing since BetOnline joined our show that online betting was never a thing for me. I love like when I go to casinos, I love playing blackjack, love playing craps, you know, love doing some of those casino games, and definitely the sports book. Are you into any of that stuff?
Yeah, I was actually at a casino this weekend. Nice. Totally not planned. We're driving home from dinner because we're out in Palm Springs, and we're driving home from dinner, and I was like, I looked at my girl, I'm like, you want to go to the casino? And she's like, yeah, sure, why not? And so, you know, we went to the casino. And it was kind of weird, first of all, because, you know, I don't know what it's like, you know, where you're living right now, but we're still kind of locked down a lot, right? Like, my kid just went back to school for the first time in 400 days.
Wow. And it's in March. Yeah. Tennessee is almost completely not. They just lifted all restrictions.
Yeah, they've lifted restrictions, but yet, you know, everything's still this big social distance thing. But that I walked into the casino, I'm like, there's no social distancing here. This place is packed. And it was like everyone was so excited to go do something. You couldn't get a seat at the table. We stood around for an hour. You couldn't play blackjack. You couldn't play craps. Finally, we just messed around with some other games and then rolled out of there. But the sports book, yeah, I love the sports book. I go with my friend Parday. Usually opening weekend, we go to Vegas and watch NFL and bet on the games and drop some money on the Super Bowl and, you know, hope that we're all going to win. And so, yeah, I do. I do like a little bit of sports betting.
Did either of you anticipate Tampa winning?
We did bet on Tampa.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good bet. It's probably paying off really well right now.
Well, it felt like it was. It felt. I don't know. There. Listen, I've never been like a New England Patriots fan, but I respected what they did. Because, I mean, how did they do that with the all of those wide receivers? They had nobody. They had no running backs. They had nobody. And so I always admired what they did. And I felt like when it came time for them to cut ties with Brady, I was like, this just feels weird. And when he went to Tampa, I was like, all right. This feels like he's out to prove something. And then when they started surrounding him with everybody, it was like, oh God, this is going to happen. You can tell. But yeah. I'll be honest. I never thought that they were going to beat Kansas City.
I didn't either. I mean, I thought once, you know, once they started really slow in the season. I remember how it kind of played out. They got stomped against New Orleans in the opening weekend. And then they kind of struggled their way, and then they found their way, and then they got into the playoffs. And I was like, okay, they'll beat Washington. And then I was like, all right, Green Bay, no, they'll lose to Green Bay. And then they didn't. And then they get into the Super Bowl. I'm like, well, they have a chance, but, you know, Mahomes is Mahomes, and that Chiefs team is.
Yeah. You know. I mean, I thought that they might put up 31 points tops, but I figured that Kansas City would put up like 45. I just didn't see. I didn't see the collapse. I didn't see Tampa's defense step up the way that they did, because I also thought that, you know, I looked at the coaching and Andy Reid's a great play caller and he's a great, great coach. You know, Bruce Arians, I don't know much about it, but I didn't see it coming. So.
Right. Yeah. I'm not surprised that they won, but also didn't see it coming either. It's kind of a combination of that, but yeah, my NFL team is the Atlanta Falcons, and the draft is tonight, actually.
Yeah.
There's a huge debate going on. You know, obviously number one is going to be Trevor Lawrence. Number two is going to be Zach Wilson. The huge debate right now is the 49ers. Are they going Wilson? Not Wilson, but are they going Mac Jones or Trey Lance? And then what are the Falcons going to do it for? Are they going to trade out? Are they going to draft Kyle Pitts? Are they going to draft whoever's left? You know, what, you know, how do you kind of see the 49ers pick shaking out, and how does that affect the rest of the first round, you think?
You know, it's pretty interesting to think that Jimmy Garoppolo was like the toast of the NFL, like, a year and a half ago. They thought he was the savior for the 49ers. Then he gets a little injured and they have that down year. I think they're going to go with Mac. I think that, when you look at that team, I think that the only concern I have is, are they going to be able to keep him healthy? Because we all saw what happened in in Cincinnati, right? Yes, with Burrow. With
Burrow, yeah.
And so
Cincinnati's a notoriously cheap organization, by the way.
Right? Totally. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how everything unfolds. I think that yesterday's trade, I think that Denver stole Teddy Bridgewater with a 6-round pick. I mean, that's a great deal. So it's going to be interesting to see what Atlanta does. I mean, Matt Ryan's getting up there in age, right? And how do you feel? Do you feel strongly enough that you're going to take the heir apparent with the next pick? Probably, right? I mean,
I'm also hearing that there might have a chance that Davis Mills is sitting there in the second round when they come back around. So do you draft Kyle Pitts, get Davis Mills, let him sit for 2 years behind Matt Ryan? Obviously, Mills just needs that experience and needs that development, but the kid's got skills. He was a former five-star. I don't know how much of Stanford football you watched this past year, but you know that seems pretty plausible.
Yeah, it does. I think Pitts is an interesting pick too, right? We haven't seen someone like him in a while. And if you could come back around in the second round and take a quarterback, then you know it's worth putting him on the bench like an Aaron Rodgers, you know, and letting Matt Ryan, you know, making it really clear this is not a QB competition. This is Matt's job. You're going to learn from him, and you're going to grow into the role. The same way that Garoppolo did behind Brady, right? Like we've seen success. I think what we see is we want to thrust that new quarterback into the mix a lot sooner than they're ready for, right? And the game speeds up between college and NFL. The game speeds up at a different pace, and I think it takes them a couple years to really like just become accustomed to it, right? Players are bigger, they're faster, they're stronger, they're more skilled. They've seen your talent before. I think buying, you know, getting a quarterback in the second round and stashing them for another, you know, maybe it's only 1 year. It's probably two because I don't, you know, Ryan's not playing bad.
No, I mean, he's 35. He's a former MVP. They got a electric offense, and his contract situation is, I think they take a 40-something million dollar cap hit if they cut him now. And I think it only drops to like 20 something. So, I mean, they're going to keep him. So it's going to be kind of interesting. And you do have a good point there because, you know, when you're looking at sample size with these quarterbacks, Mac Jones hasn't started a whole lot of games at Alabama, obviously. Trey Lance has not started a whole lot of games for North Dakota State. Great, both of them great when they did start, but they just don't have enough of that sample size. And so, you know, a situation like going to San Francisco where you have a proven guy, dude just can't stay healthy. I mean, it's a pretty good situation to me as far as who they draft. I would probably take, if I'm going to take a project guy, I would take Trey Lance because I think he has more upside than Mac Jones. I think he has a higher ceiling, a better skill set. But, you know, I think either one they can live with.
Yeah, it's hard when you're in the machine like Alabama because, I mean, you have talent at every position. I mean, Ed Ogeron is like the best recruit. I mean, that guy has a incoming freshman from 11 different states.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, and we're not just talking about 11 average guys. He's got starters from 11 different states. And so you do bring up a good point, right? Was he that good? Could you have put someone else with a different skill set in that position, would they have done the same or better? Right. It's definitely something that's up for debate.
Yeah.
But then you got to look at someone like, Burrow up in, you know, I mean, he came in and played pretty well. So,
So, yeah, I mean, there's arguments for both ways. I mean, Burrow started for 2 years though. Mac Jones, Trey Lance, because Trey Lance didn't play this year. He opted out. And so I don't know. I mean, it'd be an interesting experiment, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So my next question is, living in LA, I feel like it's like living in Alabama where you choose Bama or Auburn, Chargers or Rams.
There's no comparison. So as a kid, it's interesting. As a kid growing up in Syracuse, New York, you know, you would have thought I was like a Jets or a Giants or a Bills fan.
Yeah.
And I did have some appreciation for the Bills, but I always, as a kid, it's so weird. I always, as a kid, said, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to move to Los Angeles and I'm going to go to USC. And I was a big Rams fan. It was when Magic Johnson was drafted by the Lakers, that was it. It was like Magic's my guy, Lakers, everything. And then, of course, I moved to Los Angeles and saw where USC was. And I was like, oh, I should probably have been saying I was going to UCLA instead of USC. USC, for those that don't know, USC is in the projects. You have this sick, ridiculous, expensive school surrounded by nothing that you want to walk through at night.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about USC.
So to answer your question, I'm a diehard Rams fan. And so when I moved here, it was just like a bonus for me to actually live in a town where my team was.
Yeah. Have you been to SoFi?
And there's no debate in this town. Listen, I have. There's no debate in this town as to what it is. It's a Rams town. The Chargers, I think the owner of the Chargers did the team, the fan base dirty, right? Like they're mm-hmm. never going to be able to support LA's. I think of LA is there's diehard fans and then there's a lot of fair weathered fans. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that this town supports two teams. I think that they should have built it, stayed in San Diego. San Diego deserves that team. They supported that team through thick and thin. And when that owner decided he needed to go make more money, he up and left them. And I think that it's not a good scene. Like when you watch the stadium that they were even playing in, it's a tiny stadium that they were using for soccer. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't even sell that thing out, right? Like, what are they going to do with this giant stadium when they're going to raise ticket prices to the point where the average family can't afford to go? I think that I don't see how these both teams can stay in Los Angeles forever. I just don't.
No, they can't. And the Rams will because they're supported. And they've been there before. And
yeah.
So to me, home games are going to be home away from home for Chargers. Like when the Broncos come to town, it's going to be a Broncos home game. When the Raiders come to town, it's going to be a Raiders home game. I mean, just about every place is a Raiders home game because I feel like they have fans everywhere. But it's, I want to go to SoFi. I want to go to
Raiders,
the Death Star out there. I still haven't been to the Benz in Atlanta.
Oh, you got to go there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Death Star. So I have a friend, she works in the NFL and so she's already been there multiple times and everything. Yeah. When you think about how good this is for football, right? This is going to be the hardest ticket in football to get because, you know, how does someone that, you know, you're going to fly in for a weekend to go to Vegas and you're going to get to go see Raiders versus Tampa? Right. Like when you think about traveling to go see a team, now you've got Vegas as the destination to go to. Mm-hmm. Those tickets are going to be so hard to get. It's going to be crazy. I'm excited to go there.
Yeah, I would be too. I mean, it looks like a great, great stadium, great venue. You mm-hmm. finally have a good product on the field with the Raiders.
Decent. It's debatable. I still think that there's a mess at quarterback. I just don't think that they have that thing locked in to where they feel confident about Derek Carr's capabilities. I mean, he definitely improved last season over the year before, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them make some moves too.
Is it a Gruden thing? Is it a Derek Carr thing? I mean, what do you think the situation is there?
I think it's a combination of both. I don't know I think that Derek Carr probably gets his feelings hurt a little bit. And I don't think that Gruden cares about whether or not he's hurting someone's feelings. He's just going to tell you how it is and you're going to have to deal with it. And so we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I can't wait to see how that plays out. I can't wait to see how the quarterback situation in San Fran plays out. Atlanta, Carolina seemed to find their guy. You know, we were talking about Denver striking it big with Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, that's a hell of a move too.
That's great. Six round pick. I'd trade a 6-round pick all day long for Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, how often does someone come in? You know, how often does a 6-round pick come in and impact your team on day one? They were inconsistent at the quarterback spot last year. And so I would give up a 6-rounder all day long.
And they've got weapons. I mean, you got Melvin Gordon. He's the lead guy now. He seems to have his head on straight.
Yeah.
You have Cortland Sutton coming back. You have Jerry Jeudy. You have Noah Fant. I mean, you got weapons all over that offense.
Yeah, they got a lot of young players, and
they just
and
need somebody
just
to deal
it. Putting it together, right?
Yeah,
it's one of the better moves that Elway's made in a while because I mean, we forget, right? Like he's had some pretty questionable moves since they won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm rooting for Teddy Bridgewater. I couldn't root for him as a Panther because you know obviously he's a Panther. Yeah. Couldn't root for him as a Saint. I was happy that he was playing again, but he's a Saint. Can't root for him, right? So now I can Bridgewater. I can finally root for you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I have Melvin Gordon on my dynasty team, so I can root for that as well. But USC, man, who's your favorite Trojan of all time that you get that you got to see play? Either live or on TV.
I got to see play. I mean, the Reggie Bush years were just. It was like they were rock stars. They could do, I mean, when you had Bush and Lendale White, those two, and then, I mean, you surround yourself with some of those wide receivers that they've had. I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, Reggie Bush, those years were really special. They really were special.
I was in college during those, and I remember watching in awe. I think Reggie Bush and I are the same age, actually, but I would watch those in awe going, how does he do that?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, there's no way he can top that. And then the next week he tops it. And I'm like, man.
Yeah. He was special. I mean, truly, truly special. But you know, you got guys like Robert Woods and you know, there's been a lot of great talent that's come through USC. It's been a lot of average quarterbacks though, when you think about it. Like, you know, you had your Carson Palmers and things like that, but like you've had quite a few that have just flopped, right? Your Matt Leinarts of the world. And
I just don't think he could get over the party boy mentality when he got in the NFL.
No. He clearly had his eyes set on Kristen Cavallari and a different lifestyle.
and it got him. Now he's on TV though. He's doing okay. Him and Reggie are reunited on Fox. So
yeah, there you go.
That's good, man. So being a West Coast guy, how do y'all view SEC football? It's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I think in Los Angeles there's a big there's a lot of backroom talk about USC trying to get Ed Orgeron back. Right? Ooh. I think that everyone knows that we screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was talking with someone who does work at USC in the administration and confirmed that like there's a lot of talk about could we make this happen? I think you have to look at the SEC and you have to think like it's definitely the most dominant, you know, conference in football. And I think that, you know, the West Coast, it is changing a little bit, right? Like you think about the West Coast teams and you think, oh, we're going to be a little smaller, we're going to be faster, and we're going to play that old school Oregon offense. But that is changing now a bit. I think Stanford has had some pretty good players and, you know, they're playing a different type of ball. But I think the inconsistency of USC over the last, you know, however many years has really just continued to let the spotlight shine on the SEC, the dominance of Alabama, LSU and some of the other teams.
And even Clemson, for that matter.
Yeah, Clemson. How could I even forget them? I mean.
Yeah. All Southeastern teams, yeah.
Yeah, it's all Southeastern. And then, you know, even when you start throwing in the Big Ten, like the Big Ten now, like Michigan, Michigan is the little brother to like some of these bigger power conference schools that, you know, in the SEC. So, I think on the West Coast, I think there's also not the mentality, like we don't shut down on a weekend to watch SEC football. Right. Or USC football. Like there's definitely like USC is definitely runs the town. And people are, you know, fanatical about USC, but it's just a different vibe. Like I've been in some of the southern cities when there's been football on Saturday and you know it. everybody, mm-hmm. you know, there's flags everywhere. Everybody is rocking and ready for college football. And, you know, it's just more of a ingrained into the pattern of life in the South than it is out here on the West Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you can't be, you know, a college Saturday here. I mean, you go to a restaurant and it's all like where I live yeah. in Nashville, it's all Bama. And then you see a bunch of sea of orange for the Vols. And you can't, like, if you go during a Vols game, you're A, not going to be able to get a seat. B, you're going to have to listen to the Tennessee game because they're going to play that over the speakers instead of music or nothing at all. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things from last season was, you know, we always joke about Pac-12 after dark. And now USC actually embarked on this experiment, and it was Pac-12 at brunch. And it, you know, it was a noon kickoff Pac-12 game, or actually, yeah, no, it was 11 a.m. because we're only 2 hours ahead of you guys out there. And yeah, what do you think about the whole like brunch schedule as a way to get, you know, on national television a little bit earlier for the East Coast audience? Is it weird?
I don't think it's weird. I mean, as a guy, like, I've experienced both. I remember like in grad school, I would sit there and, you know, you'd wake up and you'd watch three NFL games and your entire day was gone. Like, I enjoy the West Coast. Like, I love how on the West Coast, like, my first game starts at like noon and all that. So, you know, the thought of changing the program around so that you can experience a little more Pac-12 football, why not? Like, I mean, first of all, who doesn't love brunch? Yeah. Second of all, who doesn't love football? If you combine those two things into the right time frame to try and encourage more people to watch it, I'm down with that.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
I think one of the most interesting changes in programming is going to come with the who just scored? Amazon. Did you, right? Amazon scored mm-hmm. some football rights. And did you hear what they're talking about? You're going to be able to choose the way that you want to watch football. You may be able to choose it without commentary. You might be able to choose it with online. They're coming up with this whole strategy. I was talking to someone that works at Amazon. They're coming up with this whole interactive way that you'll be able to participate with the games and fans, as opposed to just sitting there and watching it. And I think that to me is going to be really interesting to see how like the likes of Amazon and Apple start to change the way that we watch sports.
Yeah. I mean if you can get interactive, especially with the fantasy world, that'll change things, and that, you know, people won't be, I wish the NFL would lift the whole, like, you only can watch one game at a time type deal. I mean, they, you know, with all the streaming, just make it available for everybody. Yeah. And like, if you're a Falcons fan living in Nashville, Tennessee, you know, and I don't want to watch the Titans, I can click in and stream the Falcons. Or like, if you're a Bills fan living in Arizona, you know, you're not just stuck watching the Cardinals. You can watch your Bills, you know, however it is, however it may be. You know, just make those games available. That's what's making college football great, is because
100%.
You know, every SEC game is available, and they stagger it to where you can watch it and chain it together. But like, if ESPN's showing the Georgia game, and you're like an LSU fan, and LSU's playing at the same time, and it's you can go watch it. Why not be able to do that with the NFL? It baffles me. And you know, I know it's trying to like force local markets to, I don't know what their reasoning is, but you know, with everything streaming, to me, it just makes the most sense. Make it interactive, make it to where you can actually
make it accessible.
Yeah. Make it accessible, make it available, and make it interactive to where, hey, I can go in and click on my fantasy lineup and I can go in and actually check those games.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe we should start that business. I don't know. Let's do it.
We could. You know, it's funny. You mentioned the Tennessee Titans. Is it me or am I the only person that doesn't want to watch Ryan Tannehill for some reason?
I mean, he's not exciting.
He's not exciting, but you know what? He's gotten the job done 2 years in a row now, like after, you know, just being horrible in Miami.
He's good enough for what they do.
Yeah. He's good enough.
He's good enough for what they do. Now Matt Ryan's going to enjoy the magic of Arthur Smith. So, I'm excited about that. But when I was reading up before we jumped on this thing, I noticed you like you're a big WWE fan. You know, I grew up in the gimmick era where it was everyone had a gimmick. You know, the Million Dollar Man,
Jake the
Macho
Snake.
Man, Jake the Snake, Hulk Hogan. You know, that whole era. And then when I hit high school, it was the whole you called it the Attitude Era when we were talking before we started recording. Yep. The whole Attitude Era of Stone Cold and The Rock, and you know, there was a big division in at least at my school about are you a Rock guy or are you a Stone Cold guy. So where do you fall on that?
Yeah, it's funny. I like them both. I don't know that I can pick one versus the other because I think, you know, I mean, Stone Cold set the stage for The Rock, right? Like, when that era, it's funny. We started, you know, if you go to the era before before Hulk Hogan, right? You had all these old guys, right? That had been there for a million years and they didn't have the gimmicks. They just were like, you know, Bob Backlund. Like there was nothing spectacular about that guy, yet he was the WWF heavyweight champion. And it wasn't until like, you know, Andre the Giant, right? Andre the Giant comes in and he gets promoted out to all the different regions because there used to be like 20 different regions throughout the throughout the United States and different promoters in each one. And it wasn't really until, you know, Hulk Hogan came along that you started seeing all these guys, right? You had the Jake the Snakes, the Hulk Hogan's, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Macho Man Savage. Yeah. And that was when and what really kicked it off was when cable television started, right? Because what you had was you had wrestlers in different regions that no one knew about outside of their region because you couldn't program cable television to everything. And it wasn't until like Ted Turner, right? With, you know, Ted Turner had NWA. Anyway, so you had Vince McMahon, and he bought the WWF from his father, and then he parlayed that into I'm going to program this thing on cable television on the USA Network, and I'm going to expose the entire country to it. Now everyone in the country knows about the Hulk Hogans of the world, right?
Yeah.
And then they came along, but it really wasn't until Stone Cold and The Rock got into it, where Stone Cold just came in and just, you know, it was a big, you know, big middle finger to the industry. And it's going to be him versus the machine. And it was like life changing for me, because here's a guy that like represents everybody on the planet that has a boss that they don't like, or their father who they're mad at. And he represented, you know, I'm going to make it okay to go and fight this. And then when The Rock came along, you know, it was just a whole different level of charisma, right? He spoke to a different audience. And it was interesting when Stone Cold fought in Stone Cold's last match ever. You watch it. And I recently saw an interview on this too. Like you saw The Rock. And he picked him up and he gave him a rock bottom, dropped him on the ground, pinned him. And you can see Rock goes over to him and when they slow it down, you can tell him he thanked him. He told him he loved him. And because if you ask The Rock, Stone Cold has really set the stage and made The Rock what he was today. And so I like those two guys equally.
It was fun watching them go back and forth. It was almost like they were co-villains, you know?
Yeah. They needed each other.
Yeah, they needed each other, like to play off that, you know, because they tried it with Hogan and Macho Man, and then they couldn't quite capture that spark with those two characters. They finally found the formula with The Rock and Stone Cold. Today's wrestling, like, how do they get back to that level of? I mean, it's a machine right now. Don't get me wrong. But the level of where it was with those two, like, how do you get back to that where there's this big rivalry and like it's must see TV now?
I don't know that you ever do.
Yeah.
I just don't know that you ever do. I think that when you look at where it is and how it's so accessible, I mean, wrestling, you know, used to be Monday Night Raw, right? And it was something you looked forward to. And now it's like on every single night of the week, it seems. And with social media, it's.
And they tried to with SmackDown and Raw, like creating that rivalry. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you get back to what that was. I don't, it's too big of a machine now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it really is. And it's just kind of churning. I guess with the women's division, they're looking at that, you know, they're building that, and that's been a priority, and they've really promoted the heck out of that, and they're doing a great job. I mean, that division has grown tremendously, you know, Charlotte Flair, the Bella Twins, you know, what's her name?
Ronda Rousey.
I'm drawing blanks on some of these names, but that whole division was just, you know, it's just grown tremendously, and it's been a big part of what wrestling is now, and maybe that's the direction they're going. They're making, you know, the women's side equal to the men's side now.
Yeah, there's a lot of programming around both of that. There's actually right now it's an 8-part miniseries on A&E where they're going to profile 8 most influential wrestlers of all time. And they actually started with Stone Cold last week. It's on Sundays at like 8:00. And then last week was Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know who it is this Sunday, but like, it's so interesting. The stories, like how they take you through the history.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched, they had one on Andre the Giant. That was so interesting.
Yeah.
Ric Flair tells a story about how he sat there with one night when Andre drank 106 beers. Oh, and you're like,
I would die a third of the way through that.
That's crazy.
That's insane. Like how you can consume that much alcohol and probably not even be phased, to be honest with you.
But
I was always a big Flair fan. I was always
Love Flair.
Just the whole bravado he brought. I was always, you know, I always try to do my Macho Man impression. That's a working art, because the cream will rise to the top. Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, working on that a little bit.
Yeah.
As cheesy as that is, but yeah,
it's so great. Good. It's so funny too, like how, like, you know, think about Ric Flair, that guy's charisma and his gift of gab. Like, he's brought in to like motivate, like, who was it? Was it the Patriots one year before the Super Bowl? He was brought in to talk to the team. But I mean, when you think about that guy's iconic, like, comments and, you know, Rolex wearing jacket.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Yeah, he lived that character so well.
Totally, and
the 30 for 30 on him,
amazing.
One of my favorite watches.
Yes,
man.
Amazing.
And I would put that up in the upper echelon with the U and the Ric Flair and the Dion's Double Day and
You know,
some of those that are really fun to watch. And so. I'm a big documentary nerd, if you haven't guessed, but you know, A&E is trying their shot at working some of that Last Dance magic with the 8 most influential. They do their 8-part series, whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone's rocking with the Last Dance. So, you know, I've always, and it always, being here in a high school, you always get the, hey coach, Kobe, no, not Kobe. They don't ever mention Kobe, which they should. They always go, Michael or LeBron? They always ask me that every time, thinking I'm going to change my answer. Obviously, it's Michael, but when you compare those two, it's almost like apples and oranges. I think the comparison, honestly, is Magic and LeBron and Kobe and Michael. What do you think about that? I know you're a Lakers guy, so.
It's interesting. I think about it as it's a harder comparison than I think most people make it out to, because basketball was different. Mm-hmm. If LeBron drove the lane back in the day when Michael played, he would have been on the ground. They would have had someone that would have knocked him down every single time, right? Think about the Detroit Pistons, right? Listen, go back and watch those games. Lakers, Celtics, Pistons, Bulls, everybody. It was a more physical game. You had the hand check. So I agree that. Listen, LeBron and Michael is an interesting combination conversation to have. I do agree that Kobe versus Michael is more of a similar players. Mm-hmm. And I agree that Magic and LeBron are more similar players. And then, you know, they can distribute the ball differently. Whereas Michael and Kobe, you know, the game went through them in terms of the shots, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, to me, it's not a comparison. To me, it's you take Michael all day long. I think when you watched that series on Michael Jordan, it reminded you just how good he was.
Yeah,
right? Like,
just how
taking nothing away from taking nothing away from Kobe, taking nothing away from LeBron. If he decided he was going to just take over the entire game, he was going to take over the entire game.
Yeah,
and he wasn't.
And Kobe adopted that. I mean, Kobe modeled his game again after Michael. I mean, and there's no shame in that. You know, Kobe did a great job with that. And Kobe's attitude was, you know, the Mamba mentality. I mean, that was something special too. I remember working at Phillips Arena and seeing Kobe come in and just take over the game. And it was a thing to watch. But yeah, I mean, I tell my kids all the time, and they don't want to hear the whole, you know, LeBron comes through the lane like a freight train and Bill Laimbeer is there to deliver a left hook and knock him to the ground and only get a personal foul.
Right. It would have happened. And that's why, like, it's a tougher comparison, because there's no question LeBron's a great player, great all around player, one of the top, whatever, the five of all time, depending on who's ranking.
Yeah.
But what would it look like for a lot of these players today, back in the day?
Yeah,
it's just a different game, so it's really hard to make it an apples to apples comparison.
Yeah, and just imagine if you weren't allowed to foul Michael, even to the point where, you know, in today's game, I mean, he would average 60 points a game.
Yeah, he would have sat he would have had 25 free throws a night.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but yeah, you said you're flying into Tennessee on Friday. Hopefully the weather's good for you. I'm going to grill out. I'm going to get on my Traeger and probably smoke some pork loin. Talking about barbecue, do you have a barbecue go-to? Are you a pulled pork guy? Are you, do you get into the whole dry rub versus sauce and vinegar-based sauce versus mustard-based sauce versus ketchup-based sauce, you know?
Yeah.
Do you dive deep into barbecue like that?
I do. So, I used to go out with this girl a long time ago, and she was a chef on Food Network. And, so she would always get me, like, oh, Green Egg called and they want to give me this. Do you want? I'm like, yeah, of course. So I'm actually staring at all my grills.
Oh, wow.
And I got a Traeger. I got a Green Egg. I've got, Weber, and I don't know what the other one is. It's some random brand.
Yeah.
And so I do have them all. And I've actually been fortunate enough to attend a bunch of barbecue competitions.
Oh, wow.
And I love barbecue so much that, you know, I had to go to Texas for a business meeting one time, and I could have flown in and out in a day, and I spent 3.5 days there. I rented a car and I planned it. I was going to drive for 3 days around Texas and stop at all these iconic barbecue places.
Mm-hmm.
I must have gained 15 pounds on that trip, but it was amazing.
It's worth it.
You know, right? I do love pulled pork. The challenge I have with that is that, you know, I've got a house with a lot of girls in it. And so when I make a shoulder, what am I going to do with all the food? We've been stuck in lockdown. So it's not like I can invite a bunch of people over. So I've been doing a lot of ribs lately. I'm big on the
choice.
Dry rub.
Yeah.
I like dry rub. I like the sauce on the side.
Just a light basting of sauce.
Yeah,
is kind of what I do.
Yeah. But I don't like it when I get my ribs in there, you know, not a fan of the overcooked full up, you know, fall off the bone, slathered in sauce, Tony Roma's. I'd much rather, dry rub them and little pull when they come off. So
yeah,
lately I've been messing around with duck and making like smoked Szechuan duck. That's pretty good. Yeah,
I gotta give that a shot. I've been doing a lot of salmon, smoked salmon, and I've been doing a lot. You know, I haven't figured out pork shoulder yet. I haven't cracked the code on that, but ribs, I did some ribs the other night, had them for leftover, still outstanding, you know, and I'm a dry rub person too.
Yeah.
You know, I like a very light basting of sauce to create that crust.
Yeah.
But you know, other than that, I don't need a whole lot of sauce. I don't like having to like just to drink my drink.
Right. I'm with you 100%.
You have to take a bath just to wash your drink, drink your drink. And that's not for me. And the same with chicken wings. Like, I want just enough sauce to like give it some flavor and some accent, but I don't want to have to like, I don't want my hands covered in wing sauce or barbecue sauce or whatever I'm dealing with. And I try to, when I grill, I try to do that. And I got a little small Weber that I do some stuff on, and then I got my Traeger, which I got for Christmas. I'm still experimenting with that whole thing. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm sure you got the advanced course there with your Food Network girlfriend there for a little bit.
I had the opportunity to there's a gentleman, his name's Myron Mixon.
Yeah,
he's from Georgia, and he's known as the best guy in the world for whole hog. And I actually got to take a class with him, and that was amazing because, you know, when you think about a whole hog, that seems like such a commitment and such an endeavor. And I learned so much taking that class, but it was amazing. But, you know, just commenting, going back to your wing comment, I agree with you on the wings. I think when you oversauce them, excuse me, you lose that crispiness and the texture that I want to have on the wings.
It's going to have a little crunch to it.
A little bit, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. I'm full on Team Buffalo, but they've got to have. I always say extra crispy. I always make sure I 100%. Say extra crispy so that they'll come out not swimming. Because if they're swimming, I don't like that. And some of my friends do, and I'm just like, I can't do it. Like I had some wings the other night. It just they felt the texture was off, and I just didn't like it. So
yeah. Yeah, extra crispy is the key too, because there's nothing worse than getting that wing and it's like a little too like slimy. Yeah, I need them extra crispy.
Yeah, I need to like feel like I'm eating real food. You know what I mean? It almost feels like I'm eating baby food. But Rick, it was great to talk to you, man. We're gonna we're gonna wrap this thing up, man. I'll let you go enjoy that weather and maybe you can grill up a few ribs on your 8 grills that you have in the backyard there. But you know, I want to thank you for being a part of our show with Monster Bass and sending us all those items. And you know, Israel had to jump off and they made him do state testing, so he's having a proctor test. That's why he suddenly dropped off. But you know, it was great to have you on the show. Great to just get to know you and talk about whatever and however and whenever. We got to get you to the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, because you want to talk about a party atmosphere. Holy cow.
Yeah, I do. I need to get there. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Yeah. Let's try to make it happen. Maybe we can hit some fishing and partake a Georgia Florida game, and it's in the state of Florida. It's in Jacksonville. Yep. So, you know, there's going to be zero restrictions there, but it was great to have you again, Rick, and thank you for being a part of our show. But before we go, want to also have support for our show is brought to you by Just Live, a trusted source for high quality wellness CBD products created by athletes just for you. That's why we just came out with this new CBD gummy line. They have 6 different flavors and functions, including sleep, energy, focus, immunity, calm, and vitamin C. Plus, they're vegan and low sugar. Just Live was founded by professional athletes Clay Thompson, Alex Morgan, Travis Pastrana, and Paul Rodriguez because they wanted to create a CBD product they could trust and could stand behind. If you need support with sleep, focus, energy, or immune health, I highly recommend giving these a try. Rick, I might rock with the sleep. Sleep.
There you go.
That's what I need. But does any of those stand out to you?
I'm down with the sleep side. Yeah. All the time.
We could always use a little bit of that. So
of course.
But guess what? Right now, if you buy one of their new gummy products, you get one free. There are 6 different benefits to choose from. And instead of choosing just one, visit justlive.com, use the code support, and you buy one, get one free. And amazing. I always say free is for me. So buy one, get one free on the new gummies, on the new gummy lines with the code support at justlive.com. Buy one, get one free at justlive.com. Just use the code support. So, Rick,
yes,
have a great weekend. Enjoy the great state of Tennessee. And always. for our listeners, give me a go dogs.
Go dogs.
I'll throw you a fight on. All right. So fight on, go dogs.
You got it, man.
visit Monster Bass, get your fishing gear now. I'm going to, if you follow me on Instagram, at Burton.Corey on Instagram, at Believe in Dogs on Instagram, at Coach Burton 36 on Twitter, at Troopstar 28, that's Israel. If you follow us, when I'm able to get back out on the water, I'll try out some of these things. I'll give you guys some live reviews of the baits from a novice fisherman that doesn't really know what he's doing, and see how it works. See how well they did picking out baits for me in Nashville, Tennessee. So, Rick,
good.
So long. See you later.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.